Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
And welcome to Africa Link. It's good to be back again. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Malawi seeks to rescue its troubled election by recounting votes.
It has been agreed with the political parties that this can be resolved by opening up the ballot boxes and doing a physical audit.
And ordinary people in Zambia are feeling the pinch as their currency, the kwacha, continues to fall against the US dollar.
It's not an easy thing, especially for some of us who are doing some small businesses in the streets. We are hoping that maybe one or two people could help us, especially these guys who are in the government.
Do stay with us for the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
Uncertainty still surrounds the outcome of the elections held in Malawi on May the 20th. The country's electoral commission is embarking on a recount of the votes, which is expected to take weeks. On Saturday, President Joyce Banda alleged that the poll had been marred by irregularities and ordered the initial counting of the votes to be halted. That triggered legal action in the courts. Preliminary results suggested that Banda could be defeated by her nearest rival. George Mahango reports from Blantyre.
The High Court in Blantyre has dismissed President Joyce Banda's order to declare the election to be null and void. It said that President Banda is not qualified to do so and only Electoral Commission is allowed to make decisions regarding elections. This would mean that Malawi Electoral Commission is allowed to go ahead with the vote counting. Banda, who is ranking third in unofficial results, ordered the Electoral Commission on Saturday to nullify the vote counting process and that a fresh poll be held within 90 days. Banda's order triggered protests and was challenged by the Democratic Progressive Party DPP presidential candidate Peter Mutharika, saying that she had no legal grounds.
First of all, she wanted manual counting, I understand. And now it's changed and said now it's good to cancel the election. And then, as you say, I understand the PP, her party, now wants people to put people on the streets. And so they're doing all sorts of things at the same time. I don't know why. I don't see the point of the demonstrations. I demonstrate against who?
The ruling People's Party, PP, insists that because of widespread irregularities, there should be a vote recount. Paul Maulidi is the ruling party's secretary general.
The first anomaly we will find is that our monitors were not allowed and they were not given the tally sheet where the results of the votes are supposed to be registered. This includes what they call polling station result sheet, which we have here.
But the electoral body disclosed on Monday that a vote recount would be necessary. According to MEC Commissioner Chinquita Piri, the decision was reached after consultations with the various political and electoral stakeholders in Malawi.
It has been agreed with the political parties that this can be resolved by opening up the ballot boxes and doing a physical audit. The Commission has agreed with the parties that an implementation plan for the recount of the ballot papers will be put in place.
The DPP, whose presidential candidate Peter Mutharika said they would not be part of the vote recount since complaints were based on unofficial results.
George Mahango in Blantyre. Amid the electoral confusion in Malawi, there are fears of political unrest. Both the United Nations and the European Union have called for calm. So is there a big risk of violence? A question for political analyst Clive Gabbe from Queen Mary University of London.
I think at the moment, no. During the election campaign, there was some initial very kind of, you could call it minor violence. I mean, two people lost their lives, but this was just before the campaign started. But then throughout the campaign itself, it was a calm and peaceful campaign. And even though there was some, I'd hesitate to say violence, but physical frustration, should we say, on the election day itself. That was really frustration at not being able to vote rather than kind of frustration vented against various sects or groups or political parties. So I think going on what we've seen so far, it is not necessarily the case that we're into violence, but it's a dynamic situation, so it's hard to predict.
President Banda has called for fresh elections within 90 days, which she has said she herself would not contest. What's her strategy?
There are kind of only two President Bandas, really. In terms of kind of her relationship with Western governments, she was quite broadly celebrated when she came to power a couple of years ago. Made several pledges about fighting corruption, setting off the president's jets, the presidential car fleets and that kind of thing, which she hasn't really kind of pulled through on. And that's why she's become increasingly less popular in Malawi itself. I think the reason I say that is because I think whatever she's saying now about not standing, I wouldn't necessarily take as 100% red. I think that if she was successful in getting the election cancelled, then 90 days is a long time in politics. So, it could be that we did in fact see her stand. I think one thing to bear in mind with her is that given that Peter Mutharika looks like he could be the winner of the original election, her strategy is probably to try and attempt to avoid him actually winning the election, to have another election and hope that he doesn't win, because of course there's a great deal of enmity between them going back from when Peter Mutharika's brother Bingu Wa Mutharika was in power and he tried to stop Joyce Banda from ceding to the presidency. So I think those are the sort of underlying dynamics behind why she's trying to annul the election.
Do you think the irregularities she referred to are serious enough to warrant fresh elections?
I think throughout all of this, the Malawian Electoral Commission has actually, building up to the election, there were several problems with the Electoral Commission and in terms of the voter roll and some other irregularities, which they were pretty slow to deal with. But since the election itself, they've actually been very transparent and have actually, they themselves have suggested there have been irregularities and they just need more time to look into them and count the vote. They've actually set themselves against Joyce Banda's attempt to just call the election up. There's a great deal of smoke and mirrors, so again, it's hard to say for certain that the irregularities are serious enough for the elections to be called off.
Clive Gabe from Queen Mary University of London.
Africa Link. Because Africa is more than just a headline.
At least 24 people were killed on Sunday when suspected Boko Haram gunmen raided a village in northeast Nigeria. On Saturday, 8 people died in Jos in central Nigeria in a suspected Islamist bomb attack on football fans watching a Champions League match on television. Boko Haram captured world attention after kidnapping more than 200 schoolgirls last month, and it might appear that the group was behind almost every attack in northeastern Nigeria. But as I heard from Tukur Abdulkadir, senior lecturer in political science at Kaduna State University, that is only half the story.
Quite a number of splinter groups that have emerged are all using the name Boko Haram to actually confuse the public from understanding the real motive behind the ongoing killings. Because if you look at the pattern of killings, you find out that 99% of the victims, especially in the northeastern part of Nigeria, happens to be Muslims. And if this is a group that claims to be championing the cause of Islam based on their own interpretation, regardless of our own position, whether we support that or not, one could hardly accept or be convinced that these atrocities are actually perpetrated by a group that claims to be promoting the cause of Islam or that wants to promote Sharia. So it might not be true to say that every killings and atrocities were actually the handwork of the so-called Boko Haram. It might be the handwork of a number of groups that are out to actualize a particular political agenda, which we may not know at the moment.
Global publicity surrounding the 200 girls who were kidnapped, to what extent has that had an impact on the Nigerian government?
Certainly it is having a very tremendous impact, especially now that world leaders, either in Europe, North America, or in other parts of the developing countries, they are coming forward with their own, either from the, apart from condemnation, some have actually made their position known regarding the readiness of their countries to actually help Nigeria or help in tracking down the culprits and in securing the release of the unfortunate helpless girls of Chibok. But people are actually not more concerned about this hype. What the majority of the people are concerned is the seriousness that is lacking and the commitment and sincerity that is lacking in the leadership of Nigeria. People are getting confused and disillusioned with the failure of the military leadership, with the failure of the federal government to really tackle this matter. And of the most unfortunate aspect of it, based on the perception of most people, is the growing politicization of the issue of Boko Haram.
Nigeria goes to the polls in 11 months' time. From what you're saying, poor security will dominate that election campaign.
Well, unfortunately, issues of vital concern to our existence would continue to be discussed publicly.
Tukur Abdulkadir, senior lecturer in political science at Kaduna State University. The Zambian currency, the kwacha, is falling against the US dollar. Back in January, around 5.5 kwacha would buy you one US dollar. On Monday, some 5 months later, you would have to pay nearly 7 kwacha for the same amount. For the people of Zambia, this is translating into a sharp, painful rise in the cost of living, as Kathy Sikombe reports.
It's a busy day at Lusaka's biggest shopping mall, Manda Hill, as people hustle and bustle for groceries and other imported items. Albert Mtambo, a father of two, is among them. He is pushing his shopping trolley while looking what he could afford to buy from here. Being a newspaper vendor, the 30-year-old Mtambo says the current economic situation has hit him hard. He has had to cut down his daily meals from 3 to 2 in order to cope with the increase of food.
It's not an easy thing, especially for some of us who are doing some small businesses in the streets. We are hoping that maybe one or two people could help us, especially these guys who are in the government.
This is because prices of basic commodities such as maize flour and beans have doubled in price despite the record bumper harvest of more than 3 million tons. A 25-kilogram bag of maize meal now costs 100 kwacha from 50 kwacha, an amount paid last month, which is an equivalent of 9 euros, while a liter of fuel has gone up from 6 to 10 kwacha, just over 1 euro per liter. Zelwe Mwanza, who runs a big digital printing company, Jozeo, blames the unstable exchange rate.
We are deeply affected in terms of importations. So if you are importing or your budget has completely changed, every day you have to change your rates and see what fits on, or change the suppliers. And most of our supplier coming from Europe, specifically UK and Germany, it's very expensive.
The central bank says increased demand for import of capital goods has contributed to the loss of the value of the kwacha. Douglas Scott is an economist based in Lusaka, Zambia. He thinks that Zambia needs the international community's support in stabilizing the kwacha.
It's very noticeable that it has a very extreme effect on the local population, because it's obviously anything that they import has got a higher surcharge and they don't have the income to offset this.
According to the Jesuit Center for Theological Reflection, or JCTR in short, a family of six needs at least 400 euros for their basic needs each month. The average income in Zambia, however, is only 50 euros a month.
Kathy Sikombe reporting from Lusaka.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Learning by Ear. This is the fifth episode of our radio drama called The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. In the previous episode, Farahani came up with the idea of sneaking into Europe on the boat belonging to Sule's father, who has been a fisherman all his life. Linda, on the other hand, is already in transit on her way to start university. She had a bit of a culture shock on arriving in Europe, and right now, with only a few minutes left to catch her flight, she's still trying to get to the departure gate. Will she make it in time? Let's find out in today's episode called Is My Skin My Sin? We'll join Linda first of all, and pick up the story as she goes through the metal detector at the security control.
Hey, hey, go back again and empty whatever is in your pockets. Coins, rings, necklaces.
Sir, please.
Final call for Miss Linda Maraga.
That's my name they're calling, Maraga. Please.
Then what are you waiting for? Go on, go.
God help me, please. I can't miss my flight. I can't.
Linda rushes to her departure gate. Incredibly, her prayers have been answered. She gets there just in time. And as she sits down, guess who else she sees on the flight? It's Florence. What a relief. Linda can't wait to tell her new friend about her nightmare in the transit airport. But before we hear what Florence has to say about it, let's join Farahani and Sule at the harbour, where they're telling Sule's father, Hamad, about their plan.
There's really no need to worry, Mr. Hamad. When we land in Europe and start working there, we'll be able to buy you a better boat. The kind with an engine that you can even sleep inside when it rains. You know the ones that...
Sule, do you and your friend have no shame at all? That you come to me like this and ask me to give away our family's only source of livelihood? And for what? A dream of going to the white man's land? What is it that our young people think they see in Europe?
Farahani, I warned you this wouldn't work with my dad.
Stop talking when I'm talking. Have you forgotten your manners as well? Is this the kind of thing you learn from Europe? Now you listen to me and listen very carefully. I have been at sea since I was 12 years old. The sea is not a playground and my boat is not a toy. Get out of my sight, the pair of you.
Mr. Hamad, maybe I didn't explain to you clearly the reason why...
Out! Get out before I lash your backs. Instead of looking for jobs and finding women to marry and have children, you're wasting your time and your youth just dreaming about Europe and building castles in the sea.
In the air. You got it wrong, Mr. Hamad. It's building castles in the air, not in the sea.
Farahani leaves Sule's father at the harbour. He feels not angry, but frustrated. Is this the end of his dreams of going to Europe? But let's turn now to Linda and Florence, who after a short flight have arrived at their final destination. Linda had to go through another thorough clearance process at immigration before being allowed to enter the country. But now Florence has invited her to sit and have a nice cup of tea.
Florence, I can't believe what I've just been through. This trip has been absolute hell. I never imagined it would be this way. People are so unfriendly, and they don't seem to trust me or even want to speak to me.
Welcome to the real Europe. You know, I had an African friend here who used to say, "My skin is my sin."
What does that mean?
That it's because of our skin color that we are treated like this. Of course, not everyone here is a racist. If they were, I wouldn't have married a European. Well, I'm so sorry you had such a bad experience on your very first day. But, you know, people here are more scared these days because of the risk of terrorism. And even if that weren't the case, they're not nearly as friendly as people are back home. You'll have to get used to that.
Flo, thank you so much for your advice. Look, I don't want to take advantage, but might it be possible for me to use your phone very quickly? I just need to send my parents a text and let them know I've arrived safely. I know they must be worried.
No problem. Go ahead and call them. I'm sure they'll be happy to hear your voice.
Thank you, Flo. You're so kind.
Hello?
Dad, it's me, Linda.
Ah, Linda. Oh, thank God. How are you?
I'm fine, Dad.
How was your journey? And whose number is this?
I'm calling from a friend's phone. The journey wasn't so easy. And the people here really aren't very friendly. But Europe looks beautiful.
Hello? Linda, I can't hear you clearly. Where are you calling me from?
Sorry, Dad, I have to go. But please tell Mom I got here safely. I miss you.
Hello?
Bye.
Hello? Linda, are you there?
Thank you, Flo. My parents must be relieved to know I got here safely.
Linda, let me give you a piece of advice. Never tell people back home that things are tough here or that you're having difficulties. No matter what you go through, don't ever tell them the truth.
Why ever not, Florence? These are my parents. They need to know what's happening in my life.
Just remember what I said. You'll work it out yourself soon enough. Oh, I have to go. My driver's here already. Here, Here's 20 euros to pay for the tea. You can keep the change, okay?
Thank you.
Now, remember, you have my telephone number, so if you ever need anything, just give me a call. It was great to meet you, Linda. Bye-bye and take care.
Bye-bye.
Linda watches Florence wheel her luggage towards the car park. And for the first time ever in her life, she feels scared. Scared and lonely. She looks around, hoping to see a familiar face, but all the faces here are foreign. She pays for the tea and goes to the airport train station, where she catches the train to her university. Let's leave Linda now as she embarks on her new life and find out what's been going on with Farahani back in North Africa. After Sule's father, Hamad, refused to lend him his boat, Farahani decided to join some other migrants who were trying to get to Europe in a small, overcrowded boat of their own. But this time, he kept his decision secret. He hasn't even told his best friend Sule about his plans. Now, after many days at sea, Farahani and the others have managed to get within a few miles of the European coast.
We are looking for the gas. Please remain calm. Do not jump into the water. Our officers will be escorting you from this point on.
Where are you taking us? We want to go to Europe. We know we are nearly there. We can even see the coast from here.
We intercepted this boat in African territorial waters, so we shall be returning you there safely as soon as we have identified exactly where you have come from.
We don't want to go back. We have no papers. We are stateless.
Well, we'll see about that. All I know right now is that you are trying to cross into Europe illegally. And our duty is to make sure that our borders remain secure. Please cooperate with these officers for your own safety.
Nah, I'm not going back. I'm not going back. You can't make me.
He's jumped off the boat. Quick, no, get him out. The waves are too strong. He's drowning. Have you got him? Is he all right? Okay. Now listen carefully. We don't want anyone to get hurt. So please, all of you, remain calm. Stay on the boat and all will be well.
So Farahani is rescued from the sea by the lifeguards and sent back to Africa against his will. But he still hasn't abandoned his dream. What will he do next? Keep listening and you'll find out. We've reached the end of the fifth episode of this radio drama series, The Promised Land, a story focusing on African migration to Europe. Tune in to the next episode to see how Linda tackles the challenges of studying in Europe. Meanwhile, do join us to discuss the issue of racism and intolerance on our Facebook page, facebook.com/DW.LBE. You can also listen to this episode again and many others by visiting our Learning by Ear webpage at dw.de/Destination Europe. Goodbye for now.
Before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. A week after Malawians went to the polls to elect a new president, the result is still not known, and fierce legal wrangling has raised the prospect of a lengthy crisis. In Borno State in northern Nigeria, at least 24 people were killed in an attack on Sunday, blamed on the militant Islamist group Boko Haram. We've also been hearing how the decline in the value of the kwacha is pushing up the cost of living in Zambia. We welcome your comments on this program. You can text us on country code +491 60 957 59510, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow. As always, thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.